I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even at commentary. Nobody can touch me.
It is I, CM Jew, the best Jew in the world, here with a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews, right here on the Absolution Network. This is episode 17, and on this pipe bomb, we get patriotic and pay our respects to our great country with a party like no other, as it's a time for a great American bash. And on this episode, which Great American Bash will we be covering? Well, actually, we're not going to be covering WCW. I know. Thought I was going to cover WCW. But instead, no, I'm covering the Great American Bash as it was revived by WWE. In fact, I'm covering the very first Great American Bash that WWE revived. As this week, we will be covering the Great American Bash 2004, as put on by the WWE SmackDown brand. Yes, in 2004, revived as part of the brand extension where, again, SmackDown would have a pay-per-view and then Raw would have a pay-per-view and vice versa. This is a prime example of, I think, the bad part of that idea. And sometimes it worked, mind you, where they first started this thing and they had it. You kind of saw that initially with on Backlash, you did have the brands intermingle, and that's kind of how I felt it would work. I don't think ever felt like it worked when they were really separate. Because, as you'll see with this pay-per-view, as I'll talk about, I think one of the primary things that hurts this pay-per-view is that there's a number of matches that feel like they could just be on SmackDown. That hurts SmackDown, that hurts the pay-per-view, we'll get into that when we get into a review. I mean, the Great American Bash has such a great tradition, going all the way back to 1985 with Jim Crockett Productions, the first one in the Baltimore Arena. And that's the interesting thing, is that Baltimore has held more Great American Bashes. The fact of the matter is, pretty much from 96 onward, the Great American Bash was held in Baltimore every year in WCW. That's where the very first one was. I could look it up. Let me look it up real quick. No, I don't want all the WWE ones. Charlotte was where the first one was. It was probably part of the tour of 1986-1987. The 1986 one was a tour of 13 shows. around the south and eastern part of the country. They did the same thing with 87. It was several shows, though. But in 88, it was in Baltimore. 89, Baltimore. 1990, 1991, was in Baltimore. The 91 one was the first one under the WCW banner. 96 was Baltimore. 97 was actually Illinois. But 98, 99, and 2000 were all Baltimore. And then I could look and see. They didn't have any of these, but Norfolk, Virginia, it's actually interesting where 2004 one was. Again, was in that area. I seem to remember there was one, and I can't find it. Maybe it's one of the 86 or 87 ones, and I'm just not seeing it. But I remember the Great American Bash had been there before. But, you know, that's here and there. Great tradition, being in particular on the East Coast, in the Baltimore and the Maryland, and the Virginia area. In this case, being at the Norfolk Scope in Norfolk, Virginia, near the Naval Academy, which they mentioned many times on this pay-per-view. Again, your color commentators for the night would be Taz and Michael Cole. Interesting notes of this event, like I said, it's the 15th Great American Bash, the first one produced by WWE, prevented by Subway. Again, this is a time where Kurt Angle was supposedly injured and was, at this time, the general manager of SmackDown. Your champion was Eddie Guerrero, who, in this event, would face Eddie Guerrero in their infamous Texas Bull Rope match. But, you know, again, let's get all of that proper, so let's go over the thing. The Great American Bash, presented by the WWE, presented by SmackDown, which sponsors Subway, and I know technically we're in July, so I apologize, but, you know, I felt this was the best one to present. June 27th, 2004, with an attendance of 6,500 at the Norfolk Scope in Norfolk, Virginia. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Great American Bash. He's American proper, as we always do. Of course, we start off by making mention of the Sunday Night Heat match, which, again, is not a part of this pay-per-view. Again, damn you, WWE. Again, I do love the WWE Network, but I guess for podcasting purposes, I wish you would put Sunday Night Heat up there. But the Sunday Night Heat match was Spike Dudley versus Jamie Noble. And Spike Dudley won, probably with the ass drop, or I mean the Dudley death drop. We're not allowed to call it the acid drop. Though I was just watching him perform the acid drop. Because I was just watching the pay-per-view I'm going to be reviewing next. You know, I had to let the whole Great American Bash set in my brain. So, there was a certain pay-per-view I watched to let it set. And put things in perspective. Again, I'll mention that later. Oh, you'll love my choice for next episode. But that's here or there. Back to this pipe bomb. So our first match of the evening is the new WWE United States Champion, John Cena, versus Rene Dupree, Booker T, and the whole effing show, Rob Van Dam, in a four-way elimination match for the WWE United States Championship. This was a really fun match. It got a little slow, I don't want to say boring, but I kind of lost a bit of interest because it got a bit slow. After the first two eliminations, and the match had slowed down. But it was still a very enjoyable match, a very good match. It was tornado style, but it's like, well, I'm going to throw you in and have you two guys wrestle in there while I take a breather outside. And, like, two guys would stand outside. It's almost like a guarantee of, I'm going to let these guys fight and take care of things here. So, it had this very fast-paced, fanatic style to it that I very much enjoyed. And, of course, the setup for the first fall with RVD performing frog splashes on both Booker T and Dupree, and then John Cena coming around and doing the schoolboy on him. Absolutely fantastic. I think sort of the way the flow of that match went. And then that continued up to, like I said, the second fall, which Rene Dupree gets FU'd from John Cena after a kick from Booker T, then Booker T hits the scissor kick and decides to pin Dupree. As that would turn out, a bad idea by Booker T, as the match ends with a great set of counters that has Booker T going into John Cena's FU. The match would be about 15 minutes and 52 seconds. It would be the third longest match of the evening. Like I said, it was a fun match. Like I said, it got a bit slow there. The other thing that I found that was really fun about this match was, again, this is 2004 John Cena. This is still rapper gimmicks, Lena. So Cena comes out, does a rap, says a lot of things that John Cena won't say nowadays. Oh, God, it was so nostalgic to watch John Cena, bust a rap on his competitors. Taking blood, like, RVD, I've scouted that Rolling Thunder. The only thing RVD's going to be rolling tonight are blunts. I think I lost that somewhere. I can't rap. It just classic John Cena, and it was hilarious to hear. And you know what? It was a really good match, really fun match, and a great way to kick off the Great American Bash with the defense of a title that's been defended at that event since its beginning, the United States Championship. Then we move into one of the matches that, again, as I made mention before, seems like it would have been better off just on SmackDown. There is a story behind it to why. So John Cena goes into the back and, he runs into Charlie Haas and Miss Jackie, who all the divas have this patriotic gear on. By the way, Tori Wilson comes out and intros the Great American Bash in her Uncle Sam outfit, which you can see on the poster. Thank you, WWE. I really did need that. I really needed that. Anything else. So Jackie's there. She's with Charlie Haas, at the time, kind of girlfriend. Yet John Cena, he congratulates John Cena on his win. He hits on Miss Jackie, then leaves. Call me on the two-way. I'm like, did we really talk like that back in the 90s? Oh, God, fuck me. But seeing this is Kurt Angle, and who hates John Cena, and hates anybody who would give him praise. So, tell Charlie, I promised my associate, Luther Reigns, that he'd have a match tonight, so you're going to face him, and you're up next. I can't say anything bad other than it's a squash match. It's a squash match on a pay-per-view. And it wasn't really like they were pushing Luther Reigns, or at least it didn't feel like they were pushing Luther Reigns. From my memory, it didn't. Luther Reigns was there, and he had wrestled a couple times, and he was more like Kurt Angle's lackey. It just didn't feel like the push was going to push Luther Reigns anywhere. He didn't show really anything special other than he was a powerful guy. I mean, there were some good maneuvers, and Charlie Haas, you know, is a very decent wrestler. But again, this feels like this could be on SmackDown, and that's really the problem with the match, is that this feels like it could be on SmackDown. You know, there are squash matches that happen on pay-per-views that have some epicness that happen to, like, wow, this is really only something that could have happened on a pay-per-view. This didn't feel like it needed to be on the pay-per-view. It felt like it needed to be on SmackDown. Now, before we get into our next match, another thing that's happening through the night is the WWE Divas are in a hot tub wearing patriotic bikinis. Again, thank you, WWE, interviewing people. Or, in the case of our first segment, you have Sable, who says she's going to interview the hottest superstar in the WWE today, which is her. And basically talks about how later tonight she's going to defeat Tori Wilson while showing off her lovely bikini. Again, I question, how the fuck did Brock Lesnar get that? There is some injustice in this goddamn motherfucking world that Brock Lesnar gets to tap that every night. What the fuck? Okay, I'm gonna calm down. Calm down, because trust me, if I wanted to, I could spend, you know, an hour bitching about that, especially in light of hearing a rumor that apparently Brock Lesnar wasn't supposed to hit that many F5s on The Undertaker, and the reason the pin happened is because Undertaker was actually knocked out. Because he wasn't supposed to hit the head. I'll save that for another podcast! And we'll move on to actually something I like very, very much. And that is Rey Mysterio, the current WWE Cruiserweight Champion, versus the number one contender, Chavo Guerrero, in a match for the WWE Cruiserweight Championship. My God, I love this match. Anytime Rey Mysterio and Chavo Guerrero wrestle, it is wonderful to watch. It is one of those great feuds in wrestling. Their style, you know, even though they're both in a way Lucha Libres, their styles are just enough different that they're conflicting, and yet they work well together, and there's a fluidity there. And they had this great match that it's really, really awesome. You know, I would even dare say it's the match of the night. And there's a lot of great storytelling, you know, with the injuries that both wrestlers had, you know, Rey Mysterio with his injured leg, and the fact that they had it kept buckling, which I thought was awesome. Not that injury is awesome, but, you know, the storytelling of aspect of that. And then Chavo with his back, and then the finish to where Chavo's going for the gory bomb, and Rey Mysterio counters it into a sunset flip bomb for the 1-2-3. Again, didn't have the 619, didn't have... I mean, you did have the 619, then it got countered. And just great back and forth to where it was... Also, again, it felt like you saw something different even though it was so familiar. Which was... And just a great match all around. So, yeah, really good match between Rey Mysterio and Chavo Guerrero. Then you have, yet again, another match that felt like it could be on SmackDown. Our next match... Actually, I should make mention, before this match happens, we go to another interview segment. This is, by the way, my favorite interview... Yeah, it's my favorite interview segment. All of them I love. And the one that comes after this is a close second. But, you know, this segment, Tori Wilson with her ex-boyfriend, Billy Kidman, Funaki, and who... Oh, God. Who the hell was... It was, no, Spike Dudley. They're all in the hot tub with Tori Wilson. And they're all talking about the Cruiserweight match. Like, I knew if that was me, I would be Cruiserweight champion. I would be in there arguing. And Tori Wilson gets up and says, I'm sorry, boys. I gotta go prepare for my match with Sable. Walks out. Eyes follow. Cuts to Funaki. All looking at her ass. And cuts to Funaki going, in the greatest Japanese-American voice ever, God bless America. That's it! Chicken's done! I'm happy. I have my comedy for the evening. But, like I said, let's go on to our next match. Like I said, that could have been on SmackDown. You have Kenzo Suzuki with Horiko, versus the one, in the Ass Man's one, Billy Gunn. There are things wrong with this match. It wasn't horrid. It's just, again, like I said, it felt like this match could have been on SmackDown. There really didn't feel like any storyline to it other than on SmackDown they had a match and Billy Gunn won by disqualification. This was the rematch. It could have just as happened on the next SmackDown. The other thing about it is that it just felt really slow. And I feel bad for this because I feel like the WWE has this with Japanese wrestlers. Now, I don't know if it's WWE or if it's Japanese wrestlers themselves. I want to say it's the WWE because I know the Japanese strong style can be fast and frenetic and entertaining. But, you know, we saw this with Tensai, we saw it with Kenzo Suzuki here and with some others to where, you know, they bring them in and they have the Japanese strong style, but they do it very, very slow and precise. And it's just slow and boring and not entertaining, as opposed to someone like Daniel Bryan, who has that Japanese strong style, but it's fast, it's phonetic, and it's very entertaining. Actually, we see that with Takemichi Nuku and Funaki, but the thing about them is, while they have that Japanese strong style, and we see it with Tajiri as well, you know, it's also the matter of, you know, there's more to it than just the Japanese strong style. There's a little bit of Lucha Libre put in there. Yoshitatsu had that sort of similar problem. And he did put some of that sort of Lucha Libre-ness in there, but again, up until at the end of the match, it didn't feel like he was fast. You know, he would, you know, there'd be sort of the dry spells in between his matches. Again, not that I think that, you know, he couldn't have worked better, but I just think somebody needed to notice that and tell him. But this is one of the problems I think sometimes happens with Japanese wrestlers, and Kenzo Suzuki is a perfect example of that, to where the match seemed to be very, very slow. And I just grew bored with it, to be quite honest. I mean, mind you, for these matches that I had problems with, I didn't fast forward through any of them. I was like, can we get on with it? It's like, even though this match is like only 8 minutes and 6 seconds, it felt like it went on for 15 minutes. The same thing can be said for the Lethal Reigns match, which is only 7 minutes and 11 seconds, but again, felt like 15 minutes. Kenzo Suzuki wins with an inverted backbreaker that is not at all interesting. Again, that's another problem I had with this, to where Kenzo Suzuki did not have an interesting finisher at all. And I think that's something that is highly misunderstood and not appreciated in wrestling, even today, to where you have a lot of these wrestlers and they have these moves and they never figure out a finishing move that really best defines them. And it's just, you know, you want a finishing move that's going to define you and also a move that's going to excite the crowd when they see it. You know, when Ziggler hits the zigzag, the people are on their feet. When Alberto Del Rio hits the cross arm breaker, people get off their seat. When John Cena gets ready to hit and hits the FU, when Randy Orton hits the RKO, these are finishing maneuvers. They have great drama around them being complete and everything. The inverted backbreaker, it just, and the match finishing like that, seemingly out of nowhere, really not interesting. After these messages,
we'll be right back. Yeah, play it. Come on. Play it loud. Play it loud.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Illogic, foolish emotions, a constant irritant,
and tensile out freak!
Two!
Along the circus. Right next to the dog-faced boy.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubble.
Oh, shit.
It's a super prize package worth $9,388.
Money.
This isn't the biggest bag over the head punch in the face I ever got. God damn it!
Ow!
And now, together by live simulation via the internet, your hosts, Scott Gardner.
He killed a police officer, for Christ's sake!
Thank God damn lucky he didn't kill all.
And Chris Honeywell.
Keep away! Keep away from me!
You are physically repulsive, intellectually retarded, vulgar, insensitive, selfish, stupid. You have no taste, a lousy sense of humor, and you smell.
Looking at me? Yeah,
because
she thought you're some kind of freak. Now, come
on, let's go.
She likes me, eh?
No way.
Shut up, you freak!
Julius,
you. I say shut up! It's a man home! A man home!
TwoTrueFreaks.com.
My name is Michael Bailey, and I am a terrible geek. I don't watch Doctor Who, I don't care for anime, I've never seen any of the Harry Potter films, much less read the books. I like Star Wars and Star Trek okay, but I've never really ventured far into the extended universes of either property. Hell, I have never even watched a single episode of The Walking Dead. So what do I like?
Comic books.
I have been reading and collecting comic books since 1987, and I have been a fan of superheroes for as long as I can remember. Some would consider this a hobby, but I prefer to look at it as what it truly is, a crippling addiction that I may never recover from. To deal with this borderline personality disorder, I started a podcast in 2007 called
Views from Long Lost.
Every 2 weeks, or so, depending on real life, I pick a particular series, or issue, or character, or whatever to talk about, and then I talk about them, because that's kind of the point of a podcast. Sometimes I'm alone. Sometimes I have a guest, like my semi-regular co-host, the Irredeemable Shag, or my other semi-regular co-host, Thomas DJ, or with another friend from the podcasting world. The show is located at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com. From there, you can find the iTunes link, the email address, as well as the backlog of episodes.
Views from the Long Box.
A podcast about comics, or a desperate cry for help? You decide. Every other Tuesday, or so, depending on real life, at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com.
So, our next match, again, a match that can seem like it could have been on SmackDown. Though, I guess it could have been on a pay-per-view. Though, it probably would have been more justified to be in a pay-per-view if it wasn't so horrid and was actually good. Our next match is Sable versus Tori Wilson. Now, they're not in bikinis or everything. It's an actual wrestling match. It was just slow and, you know, it was uninteresting. And there was a lot of botches. It felt like they forgot what they were supposed to do in the ring. And, you know, I say that because I know Sable and Tori Wilson can put on a good wrestling match. You know, Tori Wilson and Sable both could wrestle. Maybe Tori Wilson didn't know how to run the ropes. I think she could. She didn't run the ropes like Kelly, so I'm just going to believe that she could run the ropes. And I've seen them put on good matches before, but it's like, I don't know what was going on. It felt like they sort of forgot what was supposed to go on. And what made it really difficult was the whole setup for the finish. They bop it. Now, the bopping of heads was fine, but it just, Sable gets to her feet first. Tori's still on her feet. He's on a count. He just stops the count. And the referee looks stupid for that. And then the whole finish. Now, mind you, it's supposed to be a storyline to where Sable, you know, faints being hurt. and uses the roll up Tori. But the storyline is supposed to go as the referee's counting three, that one of Tori's shoulders off the mat, he doesn't see it and counts the 1, 2, 3. Again, leading the feud to continue. The problem here is that Tori's shoulders, both her shoulders, are off the mat before the count even starts. And he still counts 1, 2, 3. It doesn't even make any sense that he... I mean, how can anybody miss that? I guess the situation is that he was staring at Sable's boobs. Or something. But it's just... The finish made no sense for what happened. It was just a slow, horrid match by two female wrestlers who can do better and have done better, and a finish that made no sense. Worst match of the night. See, TWK? See, Matty J? See, Shades? I can say that they were bad. I have it in me. Again, speaking of matches that could be on SmackDown, our next match again falls into that trap. We have Mordecai versus Hardcore Holly in what I believe is one of Mordecai's first matches. Again, Mordecai, the man who would later go on to be known as Kevin Thorne, the vampire of ECW, who had a porn star on his arm. You know what? That's unfair because Shelly Martinez is a wonderful one, and you know she can wrestle. But yeah, she did porn. But that shouldn't. Now even I'm getting politically correct. God damn it, Joey Styles! Somebody give me a prescription of that lovable stub muffin. Bubba Ray Dudley. Anyways, back to the match. Mordecai versus Hardcore Holly. What can I say about it that has been said about Catholic priests molesting little boys? I can't believe I just said that, too. boring match. It really was. It was a boring match. And I hate saying that about Hardcore Holly because I like Hardcore Holly. I really do, but it was a boring match. I was yawning through most of it. And again, it just seems like this match could have been on SmackDown. You know, these past three matches in the Lethal Reigns match, really, what was the point of having them on the pay-per-view? There was nothing special, nothing felt special about it. It just felt like they were killing time. In particular, when you look at the fact that all these four matches are all under 10 minutes. Yet, the four big matches, the United States title, the Cruiserweight, the WWE Championship, and the Handicap Match main event, are all over... I'll round it up and say they're all over 15 minutes. The final match is 14 minutes and 42 seconds. But there's also a lot of sort of storyline before the match actually officially starts. Same can be said for John Cena. And a bit can be said for the Eddie Guerrero, John Bradshaw, Layfield match. But before we get to our next match, which again is the WWE Championship match, we have another interview segment. Now this is my second favorite one. You know, Rene Dupree comes by the hot tub and Dawn Marie, looking sexy as ever, interviews him, and Rene Dupree tries to hit on Dawn Marie. In comes Little Guido and the full-blooded Italians. And, Little Guido basically makes a situation, I got big feet. You know what they say about men with big feet? Eh? Eh? And Dawn Marie takes a bit to, like, and he walks away with Dawn Marie. And then Johnny Stromboli, waits like, and what's your French tickler? 6 inches? All right, something along the line. It was probably much more funnier the way they said it. I probably do it no justice at all, but I was pretty much laughing. So, like, that got me out of the funk of the past three matches. So let's move on to one of our co-main events for the evening. We have the WWE Champion Eddie Guerrero versus John Bradshaw Layfield in a Texas Bull Rope match for the WWE Championship. Now, again, part of the way I said there was a little sort of storyline behind this is because he took some time to, you know, actually say what the stipulation and rules and how everything worked was, to which, you know, Taz made fun of. And when Taz is making fun of you for taking too long and rambling, you know you have a problem. But the basic way, they had lights set up, and the goal of a Texas Bull Rope match, or at least this one, is the first competitor to touch all four corners consecutively wins the match. If they're like on their third, if their momentum towards a corner is halted, the referee will wave it off and they have to start all over again. So this was just a great match. It's a classic match in the feud between John Bradshaw Layfield and Eddie Guerrero. At least it would be the culmination to it, as after this, you know, John Bradshaw would move on the feud with The Undertaker and Eddie Guerrero with Kurt Angle. Of course, this would be the start of John Bradshaw Layfield's 10-month reign as WWE Champion, which would be ended at the next year's WrestleMania when he gets defeated by the new face of the WWE and the man who is best for business, John Cena. But, you know, this was just a great match. There's a lot of great spots into it. A lot of great storytelling to where they're going for the corners. And the other wrestler just does the smartest thing he can to prevent him from getting stopping the momentum. You know, the use of the cowbell was wonderful. The use of the bull rope, I thought, was done extremely well. It was just a great, sort of brutal, stiff match. You know, the powerbomb from JBL to Eddie Guerrero through the table was a terrific spot. And just the ending, I just thought it was a great storytelling ending, and it really set up to what JBL's character would be through the next 10 months of how he would win. It would be this amazing thing to where he really was beat, but by a technicality or something, he would win. In this case, the ending of to where the two wrestlers have touched three of the four corners, and they're both battling to keep each other from catching the fourth one while they're trying to touch the fourth one. And finally, Eddie Guerrero tries to leap over JBL and touch the top turnbuckle of the fourth corner. But as the rules state, any part of the body can touch the top turnbuckle for it to count. And basically, JBL's back hits the turnbuckle right before Eddie Guerrero's hand. And so by technicality, initially they award to Eddie Guerrero, but Kurt Angle comes out and says it was wrong, and due to technicality, the winner and new champion is John Bradshaw Layfield. It really set up that storyline, and that's the thing I really loved about this match, was the storytelling aspect of it. Eddie Guerrero was great and got a great standing ovation. John Bradshaw Layfield was really good in this match, and he was a great heel, and he would be a great heel for the next 10 months, and going on past 10 months, mind you. I mean, this is the character that JBL is known for, obviously, by the fact that we call him JBL. We don't call him Bradshaw anymore. We don't call him Blackjack Bradshaw or any other personas. You know, we may remember his time as the APA, but we still call him JBL because this heel character is what, you know, really made his character memorable. So, a great match all around. From there, we have our main event of the evening, in which The Undertaker faces the Dudley Boys of Bubba Ray and D-Von with Paul Heyman in a concrete crypt handicap match. Now, basically the rules are that the Dudley Boys had kidnapped Paul Bearer And Paul Heyman had put Paul Bearer in this plastic crypt case that, you know, was by this cement truck. And if Undertaker had not done the right thing, as according, which we didn't know what the right thing was throughout the pay-per-view, because there were some promos of this, like there was a backstage segment where Paul Heyman had, you know, Paul Bearer, who was tied up and was talking about him, you know, saying like, you know, but we're sure the Undertaker is going to do the right thing. But how do we know that I won't do the right, or how I will do the right thing, and, you know, things like that. But basically, if Undertaker didn't do the right thing, which we'd find out at the match, Paul Heyman. I have two Pauls here. I have to remember which Paul. Paul Heyman would throw down the lever, which would send cement into the crypt of Paul Bearer. And it's, you really do not know how hard it is to realize which Paul is which. I should know. It should be easy. But it's like, Paul Heyman is with Paul Bearer, and Paul Bearer with Paul Heyman, and blah, 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 blah. Yep. And as it gets revealed, you know, because Paul Heyman had stolen the urn of the Undertaker and was controlling the Undertaker. You know, and he said, I see Paul Bearer as a weakness that I must destroy. And so he, basically he ordering the Undertaker to lay down for the Dudley boys. But of course, Bubba opens his big mouth and enrages the Undertaker, and it leads to them having a match. And throughout the match there, you know, Paul Heyman is like releasing the lever and it's slowly filling up. But, you know, Bubba stops it, saying, we can do this on our own. And basically stops it from happening. And it had, and you know what, for a handicap match, it's fun. Again, it's the Dudley boys as heels. It's fun watching them as heels. The Dudley boys have always been great heels. And, of course, Paul Heyman sells everything wonderfully. And it's the Undertaker in sort of second prime, where he's goddamn awesome. And it was just a fun handicap match in which the Undertaker would win with a tombstone piledriver to D-Von. Now, the aftermatch is actually the more interesting aspect of this, to where, you know, Paul Heyman says, you're a bad dog, so I gotta teach you a lesson. Goes to hit the lever, lightning bolt comes down out of the sky. Paul Heyman gets scared off like a little girl as Undertaker comes stomping down the ring. And so then he bows and lifts his hand up to Paul Bearer, and Paul Bearer's like, yes, yes, my Undertaker, you saved me! And Undertaker gets up, looks at the cement mixer, walks over to it and says, Paul, I'm sorry, I had no other choice. And throws down the lever. Sealing in Paul Bearer's fate and locking him in cement. And the pay-per-view ends with the shot of cement flowing out of the top of the crypt. No, but like I said, it was a good match. It had a very interesting, unique storyline aspect to it. Again, it's the Undertaker at his best. It's Dudley Boyz at his best. And then the twist at the end was, you really did not see that coming. I mean, I guess Paul Bearer gave the Undertaker one too many cucumbers. And he was tired of his shit. But, you know, so on to the final thoughts and everything about the pay-per-view. I'll start with favorite spots. The powerbomb Brett JBL gave to Eddie Guerrero was number one. The sunset flip finish by Rey Mysterio on Chavo Guerrero would be number two. And I don't know. I don't have a number three. I guess number three, my favorite spot would be the John Cena battle rap. That's more of a promo, though. It's really hard because those are the two big spots that come to mind that I can really remember off the top of my head. I guess number three would be the counters finish into the FU for John Cena against Booker T in the four-way elimination match. But with that being said, my top three matches of the evening would be number three would be the John Cena, Rene Dupree, Booker T, Rob Van Dam 4-way elimination match. It was just a great way to start off the pay-per-view. Number two would be the WWE Championship match, John Bradshaw Layfield versus Eddie Guerrero for the WWE Championship, as I said. Great match, had fun. And then, of course, my favorite would be the Rey Mysterio Chavo Guerrero Cruiserweight title match. Now, interesting, I'm actually also going to say what my three worst matches of the evening are, because there were a good number of worst matches. So, Ken Suzuki versus Billy Gunn was my third worst match. Mordecai versus Hardcore Holly was my second. And my worst match of the evening was Sable versus Torrey Wilson. And, you know, again, throw Luther Reigns in there versus Charlotte Haas as being a bad match, to where all of them were uninteresting. And the biggest crime they committed is that they all felt like they could have been on SmackDown. So my final thoughts on this paper, you know, it's interesting. You had four great solid matches in the United States Championship 4-way elimination match, the Cruiserweight title match, the WWE Championship match, and the Concrete Creek Handicap match. The problem with this pay-per-view, however, is that, in particular, between, you know, it's a good, solid pay-per-view up till after the Cruiserweight match, and then they have these three filler matches to fill in, I guess, a half hour of time before the WWE Championship match, which was the longest match of the night by 21 minutes and 6 seconds. And it did take the pay-per-view down. The backstage segments, I felt, were all fun. I thought the in-ring promos were all great. But again, it's just those matches really brought it down, because, quite frankly, you know, in that time, I felt bored with the pay-per-view. At the same point in time, I think it's still one of the better Great American Bashes, in particular when you think about all the WCW ones. I'll give it a solid 2.5 out of 5, middle of the road for me, because, you know, there are matches pretty much you can skip. You can skip the Luther Reigns Charlie Haas match. You can skip the Kenta Suzuki Billy Gunn. I hate to say this, you can really skip Sable versus Torrey Wilson, and you can skip Mordecai versus Hardcore Holly. But, you know, it's worth seeing the John Cena match. See old school John Cena and RVD and Booker T, you know, in their prime as well. The Mysterio Guerrero Cruiserweight match is a classic. The JBL Eddie Guerrero WWE Championship match is, I think, a legendary match of WWE lore and a historic match. And speaking of historic, The Undertaker versus Dudleys with these, I guess you can say, on-screen death of... No, not on-screen death, but the character death of Paul Bearer. So, 2.5 from me. And that is my view on the Great American Bash 2004. Do you think I got anything wrong? Do you think I got anything right? Do you think I'm fucked up on some things? Well, there are several ways you can contact me. One, you can contact me and the Absolution Network by our email at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. Make sure you use the title of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. And remember, any comments that are sent in, I will read on the air. Because I know how you guys like to read it on the air. If I had not said that before, I will read them on the air. Also, you can leave us a comment on our Stitcher account, which you can find by going to www.stitcher.com. I like our page and listen to us through that app. You can also find us on Facebook by going to www.facebook.com and searching for The Absolution Network. Like us and leave us a comment there. And, of course, you can always leave a comment on the website itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. like, leave us a comment, please. Again, any comments that are left, I will read. And I do want to hear what you guys think of my reviews. Pet Beans, also make sure you remember to check out all our other 132 Productions contents. Now, right here on the Absolution Network, we have a bevy of other podcasts. We have the Mega Mix podcast with Edwin, who's doing great stuff. We have the Otaku Momentum. We have the man in the straw hat, Shindiger Curl, with his new videos, including his new video on the fighting game community. Check that out. And, of course, our newest contributor, John Ramos, with his first episode of his TubeCast. It's very interesting, basically interesting to what he's going to do for the Absolution Network. He could talk some Tokukatsu, aka Japanese Power Rangers, some Kamen Rider, some fun stuff. You know, I personally invited him to the network, and he, you know, he's a great guy. I went to his panel. He does great stuff. I can't wait to see his future stuff. Check him out as well. Also, you have the Shaft Plus podcast with Gene and Chris that you can find at www.shaftplus.com. And, of course, my Tokyo SOS Godzilla podcast that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And the Comic Book Crazy podcasting site with CM Juice Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, and Spectacular Webs that you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. Of course, make sure you check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site that, of course, includes Michael Bale Interviews in the Long Box, Bad Douglas in the Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Schleicher in the Major Spoilers Podcast, Scott Gardner in the 2-2 Freaks, along with many others on the sidebar of the site. A lot of great sites to do a lot of great stuff. Check them out. So that is it for this episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews. On the next Pipe Bomb, I don't know about you guys, but it's getting kind of hot in here. It's getting hot in here, so take off all your clothes. I am getting so hot, I want to take my clothes off. Well, I'm not going to take my clothes off, but it does feel like a bit of a heat wave is coming. That's right. We head back to the land of extreme as we cover E.C. Fucking W's Heat Wave 1999. So until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. CM Jew. I'm the best Jew in the world.
You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Every day I pray to get to know ya. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, bring me down to negative vibes. I believe, yes, I believe. I said I believe. I stand among two feet, one knee, brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might to get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in. I believe Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in. I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight unto the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. What's the ceiling, my love will be for holding and sealing. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God, songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now, time it starts a feeling. What's the ceiling, my love will be for holding and sealing. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God, songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. And reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up, and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself, and them don't even know. Them wanna live that fast life.